So all over Love the world. Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is The Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
All my friends out there, namaste and sat nam. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Last night, I participated in a two-hour gathering with some really enlightened and, oh my goodness, so much love in that room. And it was mostly women, but it was a solar eclipse anointing ceremony. The host of the event, and it was free, that was the best part, it was free, and the host of the event brought oils from Egypt, oils that she had ordered from Egypt, and we used these oils in the room. There must have been about, I'm going to say about 25 women and one man who did the sound healing in the room. And we passed around these amazing oils, all oils, rose oil, sandalwood, jasmine, and we anointed each chakra in our body with smelling them, putting them on your arm, meditating on them. We did just a ceremony in the room with oils. Oh, it was heavenly, heavenly, because so the room was smelling like roses and jasmine and just the aroma itself was healing. And then in the last half hour or so, maybe more, I lost count, we all laid down, enjoyed sound therapy with a gong, with bells, with all kinds of musical instruments, laying down, eyes closed, taking in the vibration of the instrument. It was just heavenly. Those are the moments when I realized that's my doctor. So that's why we're talking about how do you find a good doctor. We really need to define these days what is a doctor. And for each of us, what are your needs in this physical, mental, spiritual body? And then you can determine how to find a good doctor. But I'm bringing in Dr. Sunil today, my favorite conscious physician. He's an internal medicine doctor. And he's conscious, which you don't find a lot these days, but you can find them. And that's part of the key to finding a good doctor is observing and listening to doctors communicate to you either by YouTube or in person. If you have a doctor, are you listening to this person? And are they sharing knowledge and ways for you to do your own research? Those are the questions we're going to ask today. And Dr. Sunil is going to bring his view on whether you can find a good doctor or not. I'm going to start with Dr. Sunil, an internal medicine, medical school trained doctor, because disclaimer here, I am not a MD. I'm not an MD. So whatever, if you have any medical conditions that you have not been able to resolve, this show is not intended to replace any information you may be getting from your doctor, quote doctor. Instead, resolve, if you haven't been able to resolve them, then please see a trusted health professional. And as I said, I'm a life coach. I've had over 35 years experience in the holistic experience, which means basically I've studied for over 35 years the mind-body-spirit connection and how to balance that energy. So we came here this morning, though, to do some joint rolling. Why joint rolling? If you're new to this show, this platform, every Friday morning, I encourage you to get up, or actually don't get up, but just lift your legs up and start moving your joints. That's how you start being your own doctor, is moving your body. If you're not moving your body, it's going to get stiff, and then pain sets in. And then you're going to be needing to go to an emergency room where they'll give you plenty of drugs. And you don't leave the emergency room without drugs. So if you want to be addicted to drugs, go. Don't move your body and eat lots of processed foods. That's how you stay in the doctor's rooms, hospitals, is eat lots of processed foods and don't move your body. So that's why we start off with the best advice I can give is moving your body, and I'm moving with you, encouraging you to roll these joints so they don't get stiff. And we have this amazing fluid called synovial fluid that is designed to lubricate, just like an automobile. We are a vessel, a sacred vessel, and our oil is called synovial fluid. So let us prepare now to roll some joints with my favorite music, Time for Healing by The Sounds of Blackness. I do not own the rights to this music, and I've been playing this music now for several years, and I got their permission. I actually, in the beginning, I got sent email out, do you have your permission to play your music to the world? Oh, of course, who would turn that down? So they said, absolutely, yes, please share. So let's get ready with deep breath. Woo-hoo, that feels great. Deep breath through the nose and either out through the nose or mouth. There's always different points of view on how you exhale after you inhale. And sometimes it just depends on your goal and your purpose. So for our purposes today, just inhale through the nose and exhale through the nose. Calming the body, preparing the body to move. Inhale in the nose, deep inhale, and exhale. And we're going to start the music, and we start, if you're in the studio and you're not on Facebook, you can just do the work of putting your chin to your chest and rolling your head around slowly. Slowly in one direction, and then we'll change directions and go the other way. And then we roll our shoulders back and forward, do a little swimming in the sea of energy that we're in. And then we're going to get on our backs, kick our legs up and our arms, and start with our wrists and our ankles. And then we do our knees and our elbows. and then we roll over on our side and move that leg all the way around as much as you can. Don't push it. Don't rush it. If you feel any pain, stop and rub that area where there's pain. Give it some love. And if you can, continue. Otherwise, just breathe through that pain. It's always first thing in any situation when you have pain is to start sending oxygen, more oxygen, to that place where the pain is located. Inflammation comes in. You need more oxygen. And then we'll finish off with rubbing the bottom of our feet together and our hands to warm up the blood, warm up the body, move the blood along. And then we come back to sitting up and do a little work on our vagus nerve. Vagus nerve is an important Wi-Fi system in our body that sends all kinds of messages to the gut, especially brain-gut connection is through the vagus nerve in the back. And we're going to give that some massage and love, as always. And then we're going to pat down and give our body a little pat and then move into the studio so we can hear from Dr. Sunil Rahand about finding the right doctor. It's important. And it's important, number one, think about what is a doctor today. So he's going to break that all down for us. But let's get busy with time for healing. lives are coming to an end. We've done our rolling. Now we want to rock and give our back a massage, giving our back a much-needed love energy. And we're going to rock to one side and push up and come to a seated position so we can give our vagus nerve a little love. Rub those hands together again. Heat them up, 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 heat them up. And place those hands in the back of your neck. Squeeze and release. Squeeze and release. Breathe in, squeeze and release. Exhale. Breathe in, squeeze and release. Massage the back. Oh, loosening up that spinal, that brain stem back there that does all that work, twisting and turning. And then let's just bring those arm, that hand along the arm, pat down the arm. Give that under, that lymphatic dip there a little massage. Down the other side of the arm. Massage in the pit of your arm, under the arm, to get that lymphatic system loosened up. Give your thymus gland a little pat right there in the middle of your chest. That's a key immune system gland, thymus gland. And then let's not forget the breath, around the breath. Loosen up the lymphatic system around the breath. Hold the breath, squeeze. Give love, 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 love. And then go down to your gut area down here, your microbiome, pat around the navel in both directions. And then lastly, but not least, is go back there and give your adrenal glands right here, adrenal glands and kidneys, of some love, massage. Breathe in and just give a little rub back there and say, I love you, adrenal glands. Thank you, adrenal glands. Thank you, kidneys, for filtering all the toxins that I might breathe in. Woohoo! All right, give yourself a hand. You did it, you did it. A few minutes of fly. Earth, love yourself. So we're going to move now into my studio so you get a little view of my ceiling with all my beautiful plants. I've got all kinds of plants hanging on my ceiling now. And they're just growing everywhere. I'm so happy. Having plants in your house. What is that? Light coming in. I don't know where that light's coming from. Oh, hold on. I'm going to fix the light there. All right, we're here. Don't need any light in my face. All right, thank you for joining me this morning. How do you find a good doctor? That's our topic this morning. And it came to me as I was listening to Dr. Sunil, my favorite, Dr. Sunil Dhan is my favorite conscious doctor. And one of the first steps to finding a good doctor is reading. Reading about what is a doctor, first of all. Learning about the training that the American medical system puts their doctors through, their men and women through to become, quote, doctors, and then exploring alternatives. But Dr. Sunil Dhan is going to give us his ideas about how to find a good doctor, because I love listening to professional, trained professionals who have actually done the work, and who are now sharing their experience with us. So I'm bringing in Dr. Sunil Dhan, who, again, is my favorite doctor. And his talk is actually going to surprise you because his topic on this video, and it's only about a month old, I usually go to my subscribed channels. Now, when I say subscribe, these are people I have watched and they're vetted in my mind. They have the credentials, they have the wisdom, and they have the knowledge that I need to educate me and my listeners. So Dr. Sunil Dhahan is one of those people who has the wisdom, knowledge, training, medical doctor, all that, that I share with you because I just enjoy his point of view, and he's so calm about everything. This man does not get excited or angry. In fact, I'm going to show you a comedy video he did, a play on the doctor, the medical system, because he's very strong about critiquing the American medical system. So let's listen to Dr. Sunil Dhahan on why you cannot find a good doctor, and then we're going to go through the day sharing how you find the best professional to help you balance your body. And he's going to give us the details about what you really need to be in good health. That's his main focus, is what do you need to be in good health? And that's the question you should be asking yourself. Who or what do you need to keep your body in balance? It's really all about balance. So let's listen to a professional doctor, medically trained doctor, who woke up and realized that he could not continue to do what he was trained to do in many ways. So let's listen to Dr. Sunil.
Hello, everyone. Dr. Sunil Dand, internal medicine physician. Welcome to another video. One of the most common pieces of feedback I hear and general complaints about our healthcare and medical system is that people simply can't find a good doctor. I can't find a good doctor. My family member simply can't find a good doctor. And there are many reasons why I think millions of people all over the Western world are perceiving this. Indeed, all over the world, not just the Western world, but I obviously want to focus on the Western world in this particular video, particularly the UK and the United States. Now, before we get started, I want to give you this perspective. I, of course, talk a lot about the problems we face, the immense problems, the crises we face in healthcare and medicine, because there are indeed so many. But I have no regrets whatsoever going into this field. I'm tremendously proud. I'm honored to be able to call myself a physician and serve my patients. I'm also eternally grateful, as I mentioned in a recent video, that I got educated pre-wokeism. I think I received a fantastic medical school education in the United Kingdom. And then when I came over to the United States, when I hopped across the pond, I think I got a tremendous residency medical education. And this was all pre-wokeism, when our professors, when the doctors who supervised us really taught true medicine. And I am very worried about the current generation who are basically being taught by political activists. And I said this recently as well. I do believe this is going to really come back and bite us. This is not the right way to do things. We should be teaching real medicine and focusing on what really matters. I'm also grateful that learning medicine and being a doctor has given me the chance to travel the world. Obviously, the human body, most diseases are the same exactly wherever you go, and you can travel as a doctor. And I also think for any healthcare professional, one thing that we get fairly early on, which is different from many other careers, is because of what we do, we get a perspective of life, of being sick, the fragility of life, which really is very unique. And I believe that I was blessed to get this very early on. And you have that perspective going forward about life being very short, about illness being able to strike out of the blue, and the importance of grabbing every single day and treasuring every single moment. I think practicing medicine gives you that perspective. But anyway, as for the crises that we face in healthcare, the United Kingdom and the United States are the two countries I'm most familiar with. They, of course, have very different healthcare systems. The United Kingdom is basically a government-controlled healthcare system, the National Health Service, and the United States is more corporate-owned. In fact, it is just about the most for-profit healthcare system anywhere in the world. But I do think that there is a huge amount of overlap between the problems faced by a country like the United Kingdom and the United States when it comes to baseline issues and the autonomy of physicians and how doctors have really moved away from personalized care. This has happened in many Western countries, and I think it's fascinating that countries as different as the UK and US are facing similar crises when it comes to healthcare. We are so far removed from those good old days. That doctor, and I'm talking particularly, of course, primary care, which is decimated basically in both countries, United States and United Kingdom. It's very difficult to find a quote-unquote good primary care doctor that will follow you up. Long gone are those days of that doctor who would take care of you and your family, who would visit your house with their little doctor bag. Those days are long gone. And I believe that this is not for the good. Of course, technological advances, many of them are very good, but we have gone so far away from that doctor-patient relationship and the doctor really taking care of you, knowing you, and following you up. That is a thing of the past. So why today, in 2023, can you not find a good doctor, you and your family member? Why is it such common feedback and such a common complaint that you can't find a good doctor? I believe a lot of them are the fault of the individual doctor. We have to assign blame where it lies. But I also believe there are system-wide issues. Well, first and foremost, it must be said that there are a large number of doctors out there who are simply not good communicators. They don't have good interpersonal skills. They don't know how to communicate with empathy. They don't know how to listen more than they talk. This is a huge problem. And I've been talking about this for a long time. In fact, in a previous life, when I was more part of the establishment, Dr. Dand, part of the establishment, I actually used to teach communication skills classes to healthcare professionals because it's something that for a very long time I thought that we can do better with in medicine and healthcare. Being a good communicator is key to being a good physician. I cannot overstate this point. In fact, it's often more important than technical skills and medical knowledge. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that that's a good thing, but patients will often remember and appreciate a doctor more who can communicate well, more so than a doctor who is technically savvy. That's something to think about. Now, I don't think you can ever take someone who's a bad communicator in any profession, let alone medicine, and turn them into an amazing communicator. But you can always take people a few steps up, a few notches up on the communication ladder. Teach things such as active listening skills, how to communicate with empathy, how to obviously listen more than you talk, how to not dismiss things, how to not be robotic and just think of every patient as another name on your list. How you can treasure that doctor-patient interaction and really make the most and appreciate the importance of what you're doing. I don't think a large number of doctors realize how important communication skills are. So I'd say that's the first point there. If doctors are not good communicators, you are not going to perceive them as a good doctor. And I personally have heard horror stories. I've been part of horror stories where I've heard about terrible communication with physicians, whether that's family members, friends, maybe even yourself have experienced this, but it's all too common a complaint that you had an awful communication situation with a doctor who was supposed to be taking good care of you. Now let's get to the fact that many doctors out there are perceived to be robotic protocol followers. They simply accept orders given from above and mindlessly repeat it, regurgitate it. What happened to that hero doctor, that TV doctor that many of us grew up with, that independent thinker, that critical thinker that would always go the extra mile for their patient? I know that for lots of people out there in the medical profession, that's what we grew up with. That is what we wanted to emulate. What happened to that? Now, we can blame a lot of factors, including medical education, basically teaching doctors to memorize things. It starts when you're a medical student, but to not think out of the box. It's all about protocol following, following directives, and not asking the right questions, and realizing that in medicine, there is never a one-size-fits-all approach. If you are a doctor, you are not a mindless robotic protocol follower. You must understand that every patient you encounter is a unique individual and should be treated as such. And even when we think about what medical students receive in terms of education, even going back to before they're selected for medical school, nowadays, with the current political climate, you know what happens, don't you? Medical students are basically selected on the basis of personality tests. There are extensive personality tests, so we only get a certain type of medical student come through. And that is why I really fear for the future even more than I do the present, because the types of medical students that are being selected by our authorities who think that they're all about diversity, they are not about diversity. They are about uniformity of thought. That is not how medicine and healthcare should work. And indeed, if you look at the past, the history of medicine, it is always the people who were critical thinkers who have made great strides in the field of science and medicine. So a medical student graduates. Let's just say that they want to independently think and critically think. Do you think they're going to do that with the current levels of debt? I feel enormously sorry for students coming through the system now. This was an issue. It started to become an issue when I was going through the system in the United Kingdom. Now in the UK, medical student debt has soared, but it's still a fraction of what it is in the United States. Imagine graduating with hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. You are basically in servitude. You're not going to step out of line. You're going to do exactly what is told to you. So that's another reason why you find it very difficult to find a doctor who thinks outside the box and displays a fraction, even an inkling, of critical thinking skills. But what about the system that new doctors graduate in? A few decades ago, a doctor would go into independent practice. That has now gone. As far as the United States goes, most physicians now are employees of major corporate healthcare systems. Even if they're non-profit healthcare systems, there is still a corporate type of mentality. These doctors no longer own their own practices, and they lose a massive sense of autonomy by doing this. And that is why your doctor is more likely to be a protocol follower from the very institution that they are employed by. But you simply don't have enough doctors to choose from, whether they are good doctors or bad doctors. Forget trying to find a good doctor. You often can't find any doctor, especially as it pertains to primary care. We do not have enough physicians in either the United States or United Kingdom. And in both countries, actually, this requires government funding to train more doctors. Even in America, the government funds residency training. And we have an older population. The population is aging. They're also getting sicker for a number of reasons, including big food. Don't get me started on that. And then we have the influence of the big pharma industry, which benefits from more people being sick. It is a vicious circle. But we haven't got enough doctors in the first place for people to choose from. Primary care should be the backbone of any healthcare system. It is being decimated. And I do think a lot of this is deliberate. There are lots of reasons why primary care is being dismantled and many people who benefit from that. And is it just an issue of pay? I think it's actually much more than that. Even if you drastically increase the pay for doctors, I think a lot of doctors, especially the good ones, will still want to leave because the system is so difficult. And this gets me to my final point. The way that doctors practice and the systems that we are in right now, whether it's because of government, whether it's because of the influence of corporations, that traditional doctor-patient relationship has completely fallen by the wayside. Doctors nowadays are overwhelmed. Overwhelmed isn't even a big enough term. They are overwhelmed with bureaucracy. In the United States, for instance, the amount of computer work, the amount of tick boxes that are needed makes doctors mindless, I call them click bots. In the past, a doctor used to spend maybe 15, 20 minutes with a patient and then used to spend perhaps 1 minute scribbling a quick note, writing a quick prescription. Nowadays, the computer work is overwhelming, and there are a lot of other hidden agendas in terms of the way healthcare information technology is rolled out, the companies that are benefiting, etc. That time commitment has been flipped. A doctor may spend a handful of minutes with the patient, but then could spend 20 minutes, half an hour, on the computer doing the documentation. So no wonder your doctor can barely look you in the eye because they're more focused on getting their computer work done, ticking all of the boxes. That is the way the system now works. So those are just some reasons then why you and your family can't find a good doctor. There are lots of medical professionals who want to be good doctors, but the system makes it very difficult. But we cannot let doctors completely off the hook here. Because of what's happened with the profession, it's very obvious that a lot of it wouldn't have happened without extremely weak leadership from physicians. No profession could have ceded that much territory and completely decimated their own way of working if they weren't extremely weak and cowardly in the face of whether it's big government or big business. They have completely and utterly sold out. So how do we possibly then address this issue and take things back to where they should be? The doctor-patient relationship, encouraging good communication, follow-up, honesty, transparency, all the things that good medicine should be about, as well as being able to spend time with patients. Well, the only way is a complete and radical overhaul, a complete revolution of the system. We need to get all of these other players out of medicine, and we need the right leaders in healthcare. I do think most doctors out there in practice today, maybe just a slight majority, but most doctors want to do a good job, but they are trapped in a terrible, terrible system. But fewer things could be more important for a society than having good doctors. How many of you out there, I'm sure everybody has an experience in their life or with a family member where they've had a good, competent physician, and it's made all the difference at a low time in someone's life when they really needed that healthcare, that attention, and they needed a good doctor to be by their side. But I have listed in this video all of the reasons why so many people out there struggle to find good doctors. Only a radical overhaul, a complete revolution, starting with medical education and finishing with our healthcare system so that we can get back to the ideals of medicine, the virtues, the original virtues of Hippocrates, who, if you read his quotes from 2,500 years ago, knew more about being a good doctor than many people involved in healthcare and medicine today. Thanks everyone for listening. Let me know your thoughts. Check out my online school and my uncensored platform. Those links are down below. Hit the like button if you like this video and the bell button for more similar videos in the future. Remember, huge swathes of our medical and healthcare establishment are completely corrupted, and one of the best things you can do for yourself is to empower yourself to do everything possible to have a healthier lifestyle so that you can stay away from even needing doctors in the first place. Keep yourself and your family empowered, and you will be best placed to avoid the catastrophe that is our current medical system. Thanks everyone again, and I will speak to you all in the next video.
Where do we begin with all of that information? We're going to break that down for you. I'm going to break it down for you. And I welcome your comments and questions because this is so important. As he said, he doesn't think it's going to get any better. This whole medical system, I didn't realize when he said the government funds a lot of the medical schools in our country. And this telling me he was trained in the UK, in Europe, but he's now a medical doctor in the United States. I would suggest that you subscribe to his channel. He's just so, he's the good doctor, actually, that we need, who gives information and encourages you to be empowered and fly. First, love yourself. And then I'm here to support you if you decide to take charge of your health. But he's one of those YouTubers that I subscribe to because they enlighten, educate, and he's full of wisdom, as you can see. So we've got to take a break. And again, if you have a question, press 1. A comment, press 1. What's been your experience lately with a doctor, if you're still seeing those people? I don't go to doctors at all. I haven't been to a doctor. I'll tell you about my last doctor experience and why I just decided to cut them off totally. So let's take a break. Take a deep breath. Process all that information. That was actually like 15 minutes, but I think it was important, again, to hear from an individual who's what I call conscious. There's unconscious and there's conscious. There's ignorance and there's knowledge. And he just qualifies to be the conscious person we should listen to in these days of medical corruption and so forth and so on. So when we come back, I have more audios for you from Dr. Sunil on different topics, diet sweeteners, for instance. I learned something new from him yesterday listening to this, and so I'm going to share with you about diet sweeteners causing heart attacks. And I didn't know an ingredient called erythritol is part of the problem. Erythritol, if you read labels, is in probably most of the sweetening products at Whole Foods, health food stores. Erythritol is used frequently. And that, again, is why we need to read labels, because he's going to break it down why diet sweeteners are this. This was a recent study that they did on diet sweeteners that revealed heart attacks as part of the result. where do you go? Eat vegetables, fruit, and water, drink water. That's kind of where we are. Okay. But we'll be right back after these messages.
We all say we would like to be wealthy, but wealth isn't determined by how much money you have. Wealth is determined by your power to define what money is. The dictionary defines money as something used as a way to pay for goods and services and to pay people for their work. So how would you like to have access to an unlimited source of money? Money that is not taxed by the government. Money that increases as you share the opportunity with others. Money that you can use to pay for goods and services and pay people for their work. I'm talking about Bitcoin. It's the future of independent wealth building. Bitcoin is the new money that you control. Get started building your wealth. Call 312-849-3456. That's 312-849-3456.
Are you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is the result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul. Whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
For healing. Thank you for joining me this morning. It's important that we gain knowledge, information, and wisdom in this season that we're in of chaos, confusion. If you've been with me, I've been talking about the gender dysphoria that's running rampant in our world, and that's another topic I hope to cover a little bit at the end of the show about hormone therapy, the craziness with gender dysphoria about hormone therapy. So anyway, we want to talk a little bit about what Dr. Sunil said. Again, if you have a question or comment, press 1. I'll check my Facebook page. We have Jody, Grand Rising Beauty, and Jody says, erythritol occurs naturally in some fruit and fermented foods. It also occurs in human body fluids such as eye, lens tissue, serum, plasma, fetal fluid, and urine. Yes, thank you, Jody. She's absolutely right. But the way, you know, the problem we have with processed food if you're eating fruit and you're getting erythritol, that's a great way to get erythritol naturally in fruit, fermented food, and so forth. But as I'll play for you just a minute, as Dr. Sunil reveals to us, the research shows diet sweeteners, and erythritol is a diet sweetener. And I think the problem with any processed food, when you take it out of its natural form, condense it, put it into a product, then you never know what you'll get. And as Dr. Sunil pointed out, that we all have human bodies. That's the one thing we all have in common. This body functions as a sacred temple, depending on how you look at it. My body, sacred temple, but it performs, it's a biological computer. The brain talks to the gut. There's communication with hormones. That's why this hormone therapy, oh my goodness, with the gender dysphoria is causing problems because puberty blockers are being used to stop the biological computer's natural function and process. So this crazy world we live in, as Dr. Sunil pointed out, and here's one of the first important things about finding a good doctor is a communicator. How many times have you even sat in a doctor's office and he looked you in the eye and listened to you for five minutes, 10 minutes, without writing something down on, or being, nowadays they're on a computer. So my last experience with a doctor was a gynecologist's office. I didn't even see the doctor. She sent in her medical assistant. Nowadays, you don't even get to see the doctor on the label or on the office door. They have people working for them, physicians, assistants who have been trained to do certain things. So I got a pap smear because, and this was probably about 10 years ago, I got a pap smear, and this was not even a doctor. Again, you don't see doctors. They got the pap smear. What do you, the results, when the results come back, what you want to do? Put me on steroids because something was different in my vagina. I'm in my 60s, of course. So this was about probably 8 years ago. And the prescription, when I tried to fill the prescription, the pharmacist, thank goodness, didn't even have the product. And I decided that, I think I'll do some research, find out what's really going on with my female area. And it turns out that my estrogen was so low that was the main cause of the issues, the out of balance condition, I would say, in my reproductive area. So I decided to change my diet, eat more estrogen, soy. When you're my age, soy is organic fermented soy is a good thing, because you get more estrogen. And there's a product by a company called Lifeline or LifeFlow. And they have a cream called estradiol that gives you rub it on your arms, rub it on your abdomen, and it provides more estrogen to that area of your body. Lo and behold, after a few months, everything seemed to balance itself out. But that's because I'm used to doing the research and experimenting. I'm an experimenter. I'll try anything other than some steroid. I have friends who are going through hell trying to get off their steroids that they were on. That's not a good place to be. So when Dr. Sunil is saying communication is key, think about your friends. Your friends could play the role of doctor if they're good listeners. This is how I look at it. How many times have you went out to dinner or lunch or sat with somebody or even talked to a friend on the phone who listened to you for hours or minutes or whatever, and you said, I feel so much better. Thank you for listening to me. I think that points out Dr. Sunil's point about having a, quote, doctor who listens to you. Because doctors, as he said, are in a uniformity of thought with the system. And if the government is funding medical schools, guess what? They have certain guidelines, protocols that are going to teach doctors to do the drugs, and in the last 3 years, we know what they've been pushing for a solution to your health challenges, right? And he said, most doctors are employees of major corporations. No more of the doctor visits with the black bag. I actually, in my youth, had a doctor visit us when we were sick. My dad was friends with a medical doctor. When we got sick, I never went into a doctor's office. That doctor was always coming to us, to our apartment, examining us, giving us some cough medicine or whatever. Days gone. Those days are gone. So how many doctors now are thinking outside the box, as Dr. Sunil pointed out? They are overwhelmed with bureaucracy. They're like click bots, as he says. Computer work is what they're bogged down with these days. That's what their focus is. They've got all this paperwork. So when you think about the stress, as he mentioned, even the debt burden that most doctors have because they went to medical school these days, they're not going to be trying to be good communicators, right? They probably aren't going to be good listeners because they're too busy trying to figure out how to make the next dollar. They got to pay bills. And their office might be full of employees that they have to pay. So how do you find a good doctor? As Dr. Sunil points out, you have to be radically overhauling your own system that you've been functioning, working in, to determine what's best for you personally. And as I say, be looking for someone. If you have insurance, most people are looking for a doctor because they have insurance. If you don't have insurance, you're not going to look for a doctor, more than likely, right? Is that what the case is for most of us? How many of you actually are thinking about going to see a new doctor and you have insurance to go along with you in that search, right? So, again, I think the key, one of the keys, as he said, is to take charge of your health. And we take charge of our health by gaining knowledge and information from people like Dr. Sunil, who educates us on what is going on. And here is another presentation just for people who are over 65. If you're over 65, here's what Dr. Sunil suggests for you to follow to have the best.
Hi, everyone. Dr. Sunil Dand. Welcome to another video. Three things that anybody over the age of 65 should focus on. Now, of course, everybody is different. I meet some 65-year-olds who are in the body of a 45-year-old. But we will take this cutoff for the sake of this video, because I think for many people over the age of 65, things start to fall off the wagon, and there are a lot of people out there who think that as one ages, it's an inevitable path downwards. It doesn't have to be that way necessarily. Now, I actually think that there are segments of the establishment that want people not around above the age of 65, because it means fewer pension costs, fewer healthcare costs. So please don't become a statistic. I've talked a lot before about diet and exercise, and I think these rules apply at any age, and I will continue to talk about these things. But here are three things in particular that tend to fall off the wagon after the age of 65 that you should focus on if you are over the age of 65 or you have a loved one who is over the age of 65. Please pass this on to them. Number one, strength training. Now, I'm not suggesting becoming a bodybuilder, but it is very important. The reality is, after the age of 65, one is not going to have the body of a 25-year-old, and you can counteract some of the natural age-related muscle declines by keeping up some strength training. So whether you do body exercises, whether you use exercise bands, or even light weights, it is very important. A lot of this is also linked to gait training and keeping up your balance, and also linked to ensuring adequate protein intake, which is really important as one ages. I've talked about that before. But if you are over the age of 65, don't forget to keep up some degree of strength training appropriate for your level of ability and function. Number two, learn a new skill. A lot of people over the age of 65 think that they are too old to learn. What utter rubbish. The brain is a very plastic organ. We have a concept known as neuroplasticity. You can be making new neural connections at any age. And the more you do that, you will counteract the functional decline of the brain as it ages. So whatever it is you want to learn that is new, whether it's a new language, whether it's a new skill, a technical skill, or even some sort of mind game. There are lots of board games out there which require you to learn new rules. Whatever it is, don't think that as you age, you can't learn new things. The more you do this, the better and healthier your brain will be. Number three, stay social. Now, I know it's not everybody's cup of tea to have a massive social circle and be interacting all the time, be like a social butterfly, but we as human beings are built to be social animals. And something that I see a lot in my line of work is as one ages, they become more and more isolated. And that can be devastating. And there are studies which prove this. The more socially isolated, the more of a health toll it will take. So whatever you can do to keep up your social connections with people you, of course, enjoy being with, that is very important. So those are three quick tips then that I would advise for anybody over the age of 65. Keep up with strength training, learn new things, and stay social. One of the pleasures of my job, one of the honors, is getting to talk to a lot of older people over the age of 65. Frequently, I have patients over the age of 90, but anyone over the age of 65, I think previous generations were much stronger and more resilient than our current generations. And I think you should be around healthy for as long as possible so you can keep imparting your wisdom and knowledge onto the younger generations. You don't have to have a rapid decline as you age. So keep up with those tips. Stay healthy, stay well. Thank you everyone for listening. Dr. Sunil Dand, let me know your thoughts down below or any other tips you may have. Hit the subscribe button for more similar.
So again, Dr. Sunil is giving some sound advice for people over 65. I think this applies to anyone. Strength training should be started early, before you're 65, because I'm doing strength training, and what I've discovered is I'm not getting enough protein to build the lean muscle that I'm desiring to build. I'm doing the weightlifting 5 pounds right now, and I'm doing a workout 3 times a week that involves push-ups and all that. But what I've added is some amino acids, a really healthy formula of amino acids, because I realized that's what I'm going to need. That's what I need to see. Less flab here. Look at that. Less flab. Already getting some lean muscle here. Woo-hoo! My grandchildren used to joke about all the flab that was on my body. But adding the amino acids, I think, is making a difference. And adding more fish to my diet. So I'm doing what I need, and I'm over 65, in case you didn't know. Strength training, new skills, let me tell you, going on YouTube every day is new skills in advancement and adding, because you'll learn something new every time if you're scanning YouTube, searching for topics that you didn't know anything about. Go on YouTube, search for a topic. I learn a new skill every day. You can do that every day. In fact, I saw a saying about knowledge. We should be increasing our knowledge every day by learning a new skill. I forgot the term. But also wisdom. Wisdom is letting go of things, and knowledge is gaining new skills, new information. So that's the lifestyle we should all be practicing, as well as staying social. How about finding friends? Like last night, oh my goodness, I found a whole new group of conscious friends again. That's where I am. I don't deal with unconsciousness very long. The vibration frequency too low, can't take it. My body's too sensitive. Find friends who are conscious. Might be far and few between, but I'm sure there's some out there. And then the key again, finding a doctor is finding a friend, first of all, who can listen to you, because emotions, energy, emotions are a major cause of health problems. My experience, science experience, many nutritionists, doctors are finding out energy in motion is what causes more imbalances in the body than anything. If you're out there getting angry and reacting to every situation bothers you or triggers you with anger and cursing, you're going to have health problems. I'm telling you, in the long run, if you that's your lifestyle, always reacting to things with anger, bitterness, hurt, you're going to have health issues. So finding people in your life where you can have conversation and laughter and who are good listeners, there's your doctor. The first stage of finding a doctor is finding friends and family members who will listen to you. And then you don't want to become, quote, a narcissist on the extreme scale, because we've been talking a lot about narcissism. In fact, Dr. Debbie brought up narcissism in her show yesterday, I believe, that narcissism is just basically someone who's always talking about themselves, and they're very controlling. They talk about themselves, and they want to control your life. And so how many of us have parents like that? That's why we got a lot of messed up kids today. I'm wondering if all those, some of those kids in Chicago are dealing with narcissistic parents, because they don't know how, they got to rebel and act crazy, beat up on people. What's with the violence? You know, the conversation, just a little side note here, we've had a lot of debate in our government about gun control, okay? Gun control is the hot topic these days because of the mass shootings we had. Not mass, it's like 9 people got killed, which is horrible. But every time these things come up, we got to have talks about gun control. So the worst thing that's going on is the amount of violent words and actions like we saw in Chicago, where you're beating up on 2 people for no good reason, just because they're there. And because, again, I'm just saying there's a relationship with narcissism and kids maybe rebelling because they had parents who were too controlling. So they might think that it's okay to go out in the street and break things and hurt people and act stupid and because they have parents who were too controlling. So just a little side note to try and balance our lives. We had another commercial break. Okay, time for another commercial break. When we come back, I want to share with you about this diet sweetener causing cancer. It's sad, interesting, but this is part of becoming, finding a good doctor is reading labels. We are used to picking up products and saying, oh, it's natural, low sugar, no fat, blah, blah, blah. And we don't look at the ingredients. But now we have an internet that we can tell us the risk and the problems that have come up with the things we naturally put in our body or that we think are natural. But it's a new day. Information is everywhere. So let us be more considerate of our own body's needs and need to resist and eliminate things in our diet as opposed to eating anything and everything that the media and advertisers put out. So we'll be right back after this.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant? Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of our cells, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about self, cell care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. will help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif. Join me and my co-host Kareem Hamid every Wednesday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the Female Solution Radio Show as we explore that relationship that is the foundation for our society, the relationship between men and women, husbands and wives. Join our discussion as we seek to repair broken family ties and rebuild our community. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to our hosts. Or you can join us live on Facebook at www.facebook.com/the-female-solution.
Welcome back. My guest today is Dr. Sunil Dhan. He's a trained internal medicine doctor, and he's one of my favorite YouTubers because he gives lots and lots of good information to increase our knowledge about our body, about the system. As he said, doctors today are overwhelmed with bureaucracy. They're overwhelmed with paper and computer work. And if you are looking for a doctor, one of the things to look for is a good communicator, someone who will look you in the eye and listen to you. Until you find that perfect person, do things to educate yourself, like reading labels. And Dr. Sunil gives us a lot of information. If you follow him, he's going to give you a lot of information about the things that will keep you healthy and prevent the need for doctor visits. So here's a little piece on diet sweeteners.
Hi everyone, Dr. Sunil Dand, internal medicine physician. Welcome to another video. Artificial sweeteners, are they good for you? Are they bad for you? There is so much back and forth. It's back and forth all the time. I am not a fan of artificial sweeteners. In fact, I do everything possible to avoid them, and I'm going to explain why. But the reason I'm making this video this week out of all weeks is because in the last few days we've had this story, which was widely reported across the mainstream media. Popular artificial sweetener appears to make blood stickier, linked to stroke risk. And this was a study of over 1,100 people undergoing tests in a clinic, and they found that those with the highest levels of certain compounds in their blood had twice the risk of dying from or experiencing a major cardiovascular event in the 3 years that followed. And they were looking at blood levels of organic compounds used as sweeteners, specifically erythritol, a sweetener commonly used in low sugar, sugar-free, and no-carb foods. Any study like this, any study involving nutrition, is notoriously hard to do because there can often be multiple confounding factors. Nevertheless, that is what these researchers found. The study found a link between levels of erythritol in the blood and future risk of heart attack or stroke. And it should be noted that erythritol can actually also be made within our bodies, and that the amount of added erythritol that volunteers consumed for the study was also significantly higher than quantities permitted in store-bought drinks in the UK. While naturally present in very small amounts in fruits and vegetables, levels of sweeteners like erythritol can be 1,000-fold higher in processed foods. So as always, let's go to the actual study itself. Take a look at this. So it was published in Nature, the Artificial Sweetener Erythritol and Cardiovascular Event Risk. And the authors of the study concluded that increases in plasma erythritol levels well above thresholds associated with heightened platelet reactivity. Platelets are the cells in the blood associated with blood clotting. Our findings reveal that erythritol is both associated with MACE, that's major adverse cardiovascular events, and fosters enhanced thrombosis, that is blood clot. But of course, we all know that fewer things are more corrupt than academic medicine. It's very sad, but it is the truth. So let's go ahead and look at the conflicts of interest of the authors of this study. And we can see some listed here, including Procter and Gamble. And the question obviously is, would Procter and Gamble or anyone that works for them have any other hidden agenda in wanting to make erythritol look bad? It's a question we obviously have to ask whenever we're looking at any study these days. Always go to the conflicts of interest. Ask these questions because you never know what is going on behind the scenes or what strings are being pulled. And unfortunately, academia in medicine and science is basically wed to the mainstream media, so they can always drive whatever narrative they want. Often there is money exchange going on. Very bad, terrible situation, but let's be wise to the ways of the world. But anyway, getting back to the topic of artificial sweeteners, let's talk a little bit about the history of this, because it goes back over 100 years. Now, I'll try to keep all the following explanations as concise and simple as possible, but basically artificial sweeteners started in the 19th century, and they became very popular in the latter half of the last century. And one of the main reasons is people have a sweet tooth, and they were looking for a replacement for sugar, which is very calorie dense and associated with weight gain and obesity. So the school of thought was, why not have an artificial sweetener instead, which will give you the sweet taste, but won't be associated with calories. Often they are zero calories. Sounds like it makes sense, right? But not quite. This is, of course, a massive, massive business right now, artificial sweeteners. They are everywhere. And before we get into whether these are safe or not, let's look at what artificial sweeteners are actually available right now. So this is from the Mayo Clinic website. These are the current FDA-approved sugar substitutes. These are the high-intensity sweeteners listed here. You probably recognize some of them. Aspartame, NutraSweet, Saccharin, Sweet and Low, Sucralose, Splenda, Purified Stevia, Truvia. A lot of these are household names. Sucralose, actually, is 600 times sweeter than sugar. You got that? 600 times sweeter than sugar. And here is the FDA website. Are high-intensity sweeteners safe to eat? Based on the available scientific evidence, the agency has concluded that the high-intensity sweeteners approved by FDA are safe for the general population under certain conditions of use. Well, 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 the FDA, that noble, non-corrupt organization that really has a true health and well-being of the American citizens at heart, says it is safe. So I guess that's the end of the story then. And also on the FDA website, are there other sugar substitutes that are not high-intensity sweeteners? They've listed some of these here, sugar alcohols. Many of these you will recognize again, sorbitol, xylitol, and of course, as we just talked about, erythritol. So what do these studies show? Do artificial sweeteners actually work with their intended goal of stopping weight gain? Let's take a look. So here we have a study in Frontiers in Nutrition, the impact of artificial sweeteners on body weight control and glucose homeostasis. And look at this, the authors looked at a number of studies and they found that the majority of clinical studies performed thus far report no significant effects or beneficial effects of artificial sweeteners on body weight and glycemic control. In fact, there are some studies which actually show that artificial sweeteners promote weight gain. There are some studies that do that. But could artificial sweeteners be more harmful in any other way? Well, here we have an article published in the British Medical Journal last year. artificial sweeteners and risk of cardiovascular diseases. The findings from this large-scale prospective cohort study suggest a potential direct association between higher artificial sweetener consumption, especially aspartame, acesulfame, and sucralose, and increased cardiovascular disease risk. Artificial sweeteners are present in thousands of food and beverage brands worldwide. However, they remain a controversial topic and are currently being reevaluated by the European Food Safety Authority, World Health Organization, and other agencies. I would like to stress again that these types of studies involving anything nutrition-related are notoriously difficult to do. There are often multiple confounding factors. In fact, sometimes what happens is people who are at risk of certain diseases, whether it's type 2 diabetes or heart disease, might be consuming more artificial sweeteners in the first place. So obviously they're going to be more at risk of future events based on their initial risk profile. So do you need to never have an artificial sweetener again? Well, not necessarily. Obviously, the occasional artificial sweetener is not going to immediately damage your health, whether it's the aspartame in a Diet Coke or the artificial sweetener in another type of food. Is it better than consuming sugar? Well, maybe it is. Obviously, you're not getting the calories, but realistically, based on evidence, it's nowhere near as good as you may think. So what is the science behind why artificial sweeteners are not good for your health? Well, I'd like to touch on this here. I'm going to be as brief and succinct as possible. But remember this, artificial sweeteners are fake foods. And millions of years of evolution have got you to where you are. Your body is millions of years in the making. And we have to ask ourselves, what were our bodies built for? It's very difficult to trick the body. And there is a school of thought that when you consume artificial sweeteners, all that happens is that your gut hormonal system detects that there may be a sugary meal about to come. It expects to get calories. Your insulin levels can still go up. Remember, insulin is a crucial anabolic hormone involved in weight gain. And some sweeteners have been shown to increase insulin levels. There's also a school of thought that if you consume sweeteners, the next time you consume sugar, there will be more of a response. But whatever way you look at it, it is very difficult to quote unquote trick your body. Our bodies are much smarter than we think, and our metabolic system can easily be thrown off. Your enteroendocrine system will not be tricked very easily by artificial sweeteners. There are also other factors involved, including your gut microbiome, the trillions of pathogens that reside in your gut and are crucial to maintaining good metabolic health. They are not affected well by artificial sweeteners. And there may be a whole host of mechanisms by which artificial sweeteners can potentially do many things to your body, including promoting weight gain and even increasing cardiac risk. Who would have thought these zero-calorie compounds could do that? But I do believe that that is the case. I am a first principle kind of doctor, and I like to think of myself as a scientist too. All doctors should be scientists by default because we practice science, or we should practice science, every single day. First principles are very important, and my first principle is this. Artificial, man-made fake foods will always cause your body to react in a bad way because we're simply not built for them. That is true today, it was true 100 years ago, and it will be true in hundreds of years' time. Our bodies are built to consume real foods. And there's so many other things we can do with foods to make them more palatable, even away from sweetness. So many things we can do with other real foods. We can add herbs, we can add spices to make them absolutely delicious and palatable. Why would we want these terrible, fake, ultra-processed foods? And artificial sugars are one hallmark of ultra-processed foods that is going to send, when we eat it, it's going to send our internal hormonal system, our enteroendocrine system, and our metabolic system into overdrive because our body doesn't know what the hell has just gone into it. So call it God's kitchen, call it nature's kitchen, whatever you want, you are better off consuming natural foods. And I'll come to the sweetness problem in a little bit. But let me share with you what I did myself with regards to sugar that I was consuming and then artificial sweeteners I was consuming every single day. Now, I grew up with a very sweet tooth. And I'm a big tea drinker for many years, ever since I was very young, 2 to 3 cups of tea every single day. And I remember when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, even in medical school and at the start of my career, I sometimes used to add up to 3 teaspoons of sugar, believe it or not, to every single tea. And then a few years ago, I decided that that wasn't a good thing to do. So I thought, let me add artificial sweeteners instead. And I experimented with different artificial sweeteners, and I came to the conclusion that they were not good for me. So I started to wean myself off. Instead of one packet in every single cup, I would do half and then a quarter. And I've now weaned myself off completely. I've been sweetness-free with my tea for a long time. My multiple cups of tea every single day do not have any sweetness in them. And now that is what I am used to. And I feel great and don't have that craving for sweetness in my tea. And this gets to my final point, the root cause point. We as a society, mainstream culture, is all about band-aids. It's about many things actually, including making money. But satisfying cravings is not the way to go. The solution to people having sweetness cravings is not to give them artificial sweetener, which will get them hooked even more. It is to encourage people to wean themselves off sugar, like I did. That sweet taste no longer means anything to me anymore. Of course, that doesn't mean that you can never enjoy a sweet treat. Of course, occasionally, anything is okay, but doing it regularly is the problem. And I think the same thing with artificial sweeteners. We are simply putting a band-aid over a larger problem, which is that millions and millions of people are addicted to that sweet taste. And artificial sweeteners are not the answer, and they are going to come with other drawbacks, as I just discussed. So I do not buy that artificial sweeteners are a good choice. They may be slightly better than sugar, they may be zero calorie, but they are going to come with other problems. And the proof is in the pudding at the end of the day, no pun intended. But seriously, look around you. Soaring rates of type 2 diabetes, other chronic lifestyle related diseases, all correlated with what we're doing in society, which is consuming more fake foods, ultra processed foods, artificial sweeteners, they are all along the same spectrum. And the problem is that we are not consuming and taking in the natural foods that we are built to be taking in. So until we address that root cause, we're always going to keep finding that these artificial man-made substances which we are producing and then putting into ourselves are coming with drawbacks. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why I choose to stay away from artificial sweeteners. Do your own research. You know your own body. If you think you may benefit as well from weaning yourself off, then go ahead and do so. It may well be an excellent thing for your health. Thanks everyone for listening. Let me know your thoughts.
So the truth and reality is we're all addicted to sugar. Yes, that white powder that we put rolls on and snort through our nose. No, sorry, that's not it. The white powder that we put in every beverage, cake, cookies, we're addicted to the stuff. So let's just admit it. And then as Dr. Sunil points out, what are you going to do about it? You're addicted to it. I remember working with a woman when I was managing a health food store. One of my employees would have a liter of diet soda every day. I don't know how many of those things she drank in a month, but she had a diet soda, and she was overweight. She never lost 1 pound, but she drank that diet soda religiously. Didn't lose 1 pound. I didn't see any difference in her weight all those years that she, or actually the year. She worked for me at least a year. Never lost any weight whatsoever. We're addicted to sugar. If we can admit that, like Dr. Sunil said, well, then we can take steps to overcome our addiction, like any addiction, whether it's alcohol, drugs, or whatever. Do you want to overcome your addiction, which may be affecting your health, especially in the long run, as we looked at the artificial sweeteners, how they affecting the heart, just the heart alone. So we think artificial sweeteners are better than sugar, which is damaging all kinds of parts in the body, inflammation. But are artificial sweeteners the solution? No, absolutely not. So what do we do if we choose to work on our addiction? One of the things I've learned about is eating berries. That's right, blueberries, strawberries, blackberries, raspberries. Eating berries in a smoothie every morning helps to curb the sugar appetite. So that's one, just one way to attack the addiction or deal with the addiction we all have for this white substance that we snort up our nose. No, I mean, put in our mouth. It's just like cocaine, though. Might as well. In fact, there are studies that have shown white sugar is more addicting than cocaine. I would tend to agree with that. I got family members that are totally addicted to sugar. They got to put it in their coffee. They have to buy cookies. They make cookies. They buy chocolate cake. They buy all kinds of sugar comes into this house next door. And I see it in houses that I visit. But those who are conscious, I see the continual consumption of white sugar as an unconscious behavior as well as tied to emotional traumas. If you have a child, and the other thing is birthday parties. Let's not leave out birthday parties. We became more and more addicted to sugar by attending birthday parties. If you were in a community or family that had regular birthday parties, what do you eat at birthday parties? Sugar, sugar, sugar. I tried to raise my two sons by making sugar-free cakes. That didn't go over well at all. I became the most hated mom in the neighborhood because I was trying to wean them off the sugar. Couldn't happen. They would sneak it in the closets. I'd find it everywhere. That doesn't work. So the birthday parties, that's where I think most of the sugar addiction starts. How do you feel, if you think about this, how do you usually feel at a birthday party? Happy, 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 fun, 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 sugar, sugar, sugar. When we become depressed or sad or frustrated, what do we want to feel? Happy, happy, happy. So what do? We go back to that sugar drug. Let's get back to the sugar drug and increase our endorphins, the hormone, happy hormones. We want to bring the happy hormones back. So what do most of us do? We look for the sugar, the cake, the Coke, the cookies, whatever, anything. Sugar, I need sugar. Well, the addicts that we are, we're looking for sugar every day. But one of the solutions is berries. How simple is that? I went berry picking last weekend with my grandchildren, my son and his girl. We had such fun. And so I'm just determined every morning to make berry and kefir or a yogurt smoothie every morning. I've been adding bananas, but I probably need to eliminate them because my eyes are telling me that I've had too much sugar. The sugar affects the eyes. I have had people in my life, elder people, my mother's friends, who went totally blind. And I saw all the sugar they consumed, not just sugar, but alcohol. Alcohol and sugar will affect your eyes. And one man, Mr. Ketchin, I remember his last days on earth. He was so overweight, he couldn't even move. He was blind. And I have a centenarian, we're going to go to a break in a minute, but I have a centenarian in my life. This man lives only 5 minutes from me. I was working for him at his house, cleaning his house for 2 years. I would go and clean his house. He's now 101 years old. And when I was cleaning his house, of course, I'd be in the kitchen looking at all the cakes and cookies and all that. He's diabetic, so I figured after he reached 95, what the hell he wants to eat. But now he's blind in one eye, blind in his left eye. He has a pacemaker. He's diabetic. He has to shoot insulin twice a day. And I just feel so compassionate toward him because he's still alive. For one, we have great conversations. And I told him last week, I went to visit him after many weeks off. And I said, you're like my father. You and I have conversations like my dad and I used to have, and I love coming and talking to you, but it's interesting. I'm not going to say it's sad, but I'm blessed to be able to observe a 101-year-old human being and the consequences of his choices, especially when it comes to diet and food. Consequences. sugar. Some of these artificial sweeteners, he said, are 600 times sweeter than sugar. So you're better off probably eating the white stuff than the artificial in terms of the effect it's having on the body. But it's still white sugar, as I'm feeling with my centenarian. In fact, he told me last week his other eye is starting to go bad. Ah, so the blindness is starting to kick in. But he's 101 years old. Ah, celebrate, celebrate. Have your cookies, cakes. And he knows he's on his way out. He's paying $4,000 a month to be in this very nice, clean facility that takes him to his doctor, fixes three meals a day, cleans his apartment. This is what you got to pay these days to live in a clean, nice facility, senior living, assisted living, $4,000 a month in Florida. Think about that. So do we want to fly every morning, first love yourself with some joint rolling, and do we want to work on our sugar addiction? Otherwise, your children are more than likely not going to take care of you when you get older. They love to push you in a facility. Now, if you have to go to a senior living place that's only $1,000 a month, look for the roaches, the mice, and whatever, and uncleanness. That's what I have seen. I've visited people in these low-cost facilities, and it's not funny, it's not fun, it's not healthy, but that's what you get when you don't take care of your body and find a better doctor than the ones the system provides for us. We're going to take our last break, and when we come back, I'll answer. I have someone with their hand raised. I'll answer. I'll open the mic. If you have a question or comment, please post it on Facebook. I'm on Facebook, Soul Purpose Healing, and the other Facebook. And we're here until the top of the hour, 10 or maybe, oh, we might go over. If you have a lot of questions, we'll go over. And I have some important audios I want to play for you about this gender dysphoria. Our government's conducting hearings on this topic, so I do want to bring you up to speed on puberty blockers. This is such an amazing evil in our society. But if you've been following me on Soul Purpose Healing, there's a spiritual reason why we're seeing not just puberty blockers and other evils, but there's a spiritual reason why these things are taking place. So it gives me some peace about not getting anxious or frustrated about the insanity that we witness. And it's like a movie. Let's just look at it as a movie. And taking our last break here, I'm looking for the commercials, and we'll be right back after these messages. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my three-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com. And I'm Viato.
Do you or your organization need space for an event? Call the Quarry Event Center at 2423 East 75th Street in Chicago for your parties, banquets, award ceremonies, repasses, concerts, and business seminars, available 7 days a week, now under new management. Call us at the Quarry at 773-663-2557. That's 773-663-2557.
Hi, I'm Mama Joy.
And I'm Reverend Rosemary.
Join us every second Saturday of the month 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time here on the Female Solution Global Radio TV show for Neighborship of Joy.
We'll have powerful conversations inviting women to walk in the light.
So call in 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak to the host.
You can also join us live on the Female Solution Facebook page and YouTube channel.
So see you on the second Saturday on the Neighborship of Joy.
Thank you for joining me this morning. This show is important to share with your friends. I'm sure that we all have friends who are sick and inactive. And so I pray that this show can bring people out of their inactivity and they become more social. And part of that, our job would be to listen, be better listeners to our friends who are sick and dying. And that's the first step. One of the first steps to finding a good doctor is being a good listener to your friends. You can be you can be a doctor to your friends when you listen to them, because that releases tension when people can talk about their challenges in life. You don't want to spend hours listening to people, but at least give some time of listening. And that's what doctors don't do well. As Dr. Sunil pointed out, communicators are what you want from your doctor. You want doctors who are looking you in the eye and not looking at their computer and their paper and not ready to write a prescription to you. So finding a good doctor means educating yourself and doing the work you need to do to read labels, getting off the drugs like sugar and artificial sweeteners that are 600 times sweeter than sugar. And what are they doing? There are consequences, as our doctor Sunil says, there are consequences to your gut microbiome, and your body reacts to all these artificial ingredients that we're putting in this body. And if you're lucky to live to be 101, like my friend next around the corner, you're going to lose an eye or two, be on diabetes, be diabetic, and have a heart pacemaker by the time you're 101 if you continue the path of eating lots of sugar and artificial ingredients and processed food. So we don't need doctors when we practice discipline. Something that's a bad word in my son's house. Discipline? What's that? So we are using sugar and all these other processed foods for comfort, right? If we can renew our thinking, renew our mind, and start really meditating and focusing on why are we addicted to the substance? What do we need to comfort? Why are we needing this comfort food, and check in on our emotions, energy emotions. When we're depressed, anxious, frustrated, unforgiving, sad, and all the other low frequency emotions, we're going to be looking for a drug. And the drug of choice in most of our society is sugar, because it's readily available at every store, liquor store, you name it. Sugar is the drug of choice because it's available. And we don't look at it as a drug. I want from this day forward to suggest you start looking at sugar as a drug. And if you're consuming it on a regular basis, you're an addict. Just admit, I have admitted it. That's why I'm drinking berries and yogurt in the morning or kefir, because I'm trying to get rid of the addiction that I've had for years of sugar. So I'm doing better, but let's talk to you. We have a couple of callers who pressed 1-321-368. Your mic is open. Welcome.
Hello. This is Mikhail.
Mikhail, my best friend in Melbourne. Welcome. How are you?
I'm blessed. What about you?
I'm good, good. The sun is shining. And how are you? What's your comment today?
I just wanted to comment on what you were speaking about the addiction and what I see as like the beginning of addiction. First of all, I'd like to say that in the industry that puts out the baby formulas, they're all together. They're all family, you know, cousins and such. And so consequently, they're all in line to profit from whatever their industry produces. Consequently, they're using the hospitals, the doctors, and the media as their agents of promoting their products. And so you see that all of this is covered in this programming because the babies are programmed through the addiction, okay, which actually facilitates the addiction through these formulas. I remember when I was a child, I used to be sent to the store because I used to have to run the store for various people in our rooming house, because we owned a rooming house. And so some of there would be lactating mothers.
Mikhail, you have a lot of static. Can you change your speaker or something? Because there's a lot of static in your voice. I don't know. Are you on a speakerphone?
Let me see. How is that?
Static. Keep going.
Yep. Okay. Can you hear me now better or no?
Yeah, you're okay. Go ahead. Speak up.
Okay, so what I was saying is basically sugar is in those formulas, okay? Mothers are encouraged basically to feed their babies formulas and consequently not breastfeed them. So they're getting that lactose from the cow's milk, and they're getting also added sugars that are in that formula. So that baby, right from the beginning, is getting, this is program behavior, because these people are building on making a profit from that addiction. And so consequently, that child starting off wanting, and then wanting these sugar products, and then once the child also advances, they're giving them like juices and all of these things that contain a loaded with sugar, all of that. So it starts way back then, and it's programmed, and then it progresses. And actually, what I look at as a progression is really a digression. But anyway, with that, I just wanted to share that. And there's something else I could say about the sugar substitute, because I remember when I first came to Florida to take care of my dad, I saw that he was using a lot of, he used one particular one. It always had to be the one in the blue, the equal. And I did a study for his sake, and I reported to him the results of my study and finding out about how that these things were used originally as pesticides, and how that even in the military, they had to take the pilots off of these sugar substitutes because some of them were experiencing blindness and different things as their scientists figured it out or did the research and found out. I'm sorry?
No,
okay.
You're fine.
Basically, I just dropped that information.
Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing that out. So what Mikhail is sharing is that it starts at an early age, this addiction that we all have for sugar. And I remember there was a recipe for baby's formula that included Karo syrup. Remember Karo syrup? Mothers used to make formulas and add Karo syrup to it. So we have done a lot of ignorant things in our lives to create this addiction, to promote this addiction. And so let me go to another caller. We only have about 10 minutes left. And so let's hear from 312-67 on your mic.
We are in Yashalom. Assalamu alaikum and grand rising to you, Dr. B. How you doing? Minister Plump in Chicago, Illinois.
Thank you. How are you, Mr. Plump, or Minister Plump?
Well, thank you for, you know, focusing on our health is our wealth, and I am one of those two that's guilty just like you and everybody else on that sugar. I got to relieve myself and pray for myself, and I'll be praying, and we'll be praying for Chicago, America, and the world. On this Sunday, we're going to be at the parade at Washington Park Fieldhouse, 5531 South Dr. King Drive at 1 o'clock. Behind the fieldhouse is a parking lot. That's where we're going to start the parade from. And for more information, brothers and sisters,
I hope you're bringing these young people along in the parade. Show them how to be more respectful and nonviolent. You know, Chicago
Hallelujah.
Is negative news. I hope your mayor has some solutions to this because it's a deep problem. So, Ms. Pump, I'm going to keep
you're
moving.
Right. Okay, can I give you just this here? For more information, go to the PlumpFoundation.org, okay?
Remember Ms. Minister Plump. He's promotes music and parades and all that. You need to be working on those youth and the music especially. I think you can play an important role, Mr. Plump, by bringing healing music to Chicago. Healing music. And probably would help if you open a few yoga centers. I keep saying the solution to Chicago's violence and strange behavior is more yoga centers. Put a yoga center on every block instead of liquor stores and all the other crap they got there in Chicago. A church. Let's just move out some of the church. Obviously, the churches are not being effective in Chicago. So let's put yoga centers in Chicago. All right, so that's my little spiel. I want to just touch briefly on the gender dysphobia problem in our country, and that's why it bothers me to see children behaving like that in Chicago. It's just another demonstration of how our youth are out of balance. Our youth are confused. Their parents are absent, obviously. All those things, there's so much. But there's an interesting thing going on in Washington. They're having these meetings about gender dysphobia. I have to play this because this is an interesting exchange of what our government is doing to try and bring solutions to the problems in our country. And gender dysphobia is an epidemic because now a lot of them are detransitioning. They made these choices to have puberty blockers and all these things, and now they're regretting it and they're trying to reverse it. So this is an exchange going on between the Surgeon General, who's a transgender, and one of our congressmen. And we need to be praying for our country and these people in Washington that they will bring true solutions. But this is about puberty blockers. Puberty blockers are one of the worst elements they brought into the medical system to stop the natural process of maturing in children. And I want to just play this exchange that's going on between one of our congressmen and the so-called, I think, Surgeon General, who's a transgender of the worst kind, I think.
Genital mutilation has been nearly universally condemned. Genital mutilation has been condemned by the WHO, the United Nations Children's Fund, the United Nations Population Fund. According to the WHO, genital mutilation is recognized internationally as a violation of human rights. Genital mutilation is considered particularly egregious because, as the WHO notes, it is nearly always carried out on minors and is a violation of the rights of children. Most genital mutilation is not typically performed by force, but as WHO notes, that by social convention, social norm, the social pressure to conform, to do what others do and have been doing, as well as the need to be accepted socially and the fear of being rejected by the community. American culture is now normalizing the idea that minors can be given hormones to prevent their biological development of their secondary sexual characteristics. Dr. Levine, you have supported both allowing minors to be given hormone blockers to prevent them from going through puberty, as well as surgical destruction of a minor's genitalia. Like surgical mutilation, hormonal interruption of puberty can permanently alter and prevent secondary sexual characteristics. The American College of Pediatricians reports that 80 to 95% of prepubertal children with gender dysphoria will experience resolution by late adolescence if not exposed to medical intervention and social affirmation. Dr. Levine, do you believe that minors are capable of making such a life-changing decision as changing one's sex?
Well, Senator, thank you for your interest in this question. Transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field with robust research and standards of care that have been developed. And if I am fortunate enough to be confirmed as the Assistant Secretary of Health, I will look forward to working with you and your office and coming to your office and discussing the particulars of the standards of care for transgender medicine.
The specific question was about minors. Let's be a little more specific since you evaded the question. Do you support the government intervening to override the parent's consent to give a child puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and/or amputation surgery of breasts and genitalia? You have said that you're willing to accelerate the protocols for street kids. I'm alarmed that poor kids with no parents who are homeless and distraught, you would just go through this and allow that to happen to a minor. I would hope that you would have compassion for Kira Bell, who's a 23-year-old girl who was confused with her identity. At 14, she read on the internet about something about transsexuals. She thought, well, maybe that's what I am. She ended up getting these puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones. She had her breasts amputated. But here's what ultimately she says now. And this is a very insightful decision from someone who made a mistake but was led to believe this was a good thing by the medical community. I made a brash decision as a teenager, as a lot of teenagers do, trying to find confidence and happiness, except now the rest of my life will be negatively affected, she said, adding that the medicalized gender transitioning was a very temporary, superficial fix for a very complex identity issue. What I'm alarmed at is that you're not willing to say absolutely minors shouldn't be making decisions to amputate their breast or to amputate their genitalia. For most of our history, we believe that minors don't have full rights and the parents need to be involved. So I'm alarmed that you won't say with certainty that minors should not have the ability to make the decision to take hormones that will affect them for the rest of their life. Will you make a more firm decision on whether or not minors should be involved in these decisions?
Senator, transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field, and if confirmed to the position of Assistant Secretary of Health, I would certainly be pleased to come to your office and talk with you and your staff about the standards of care and the complexity of this field.
Let it go into the record that the witness refused to answer the question. The question is a very specific one. Should minors be making these momentous decisions? For most of the history of medicine, we wouldn't let you have a cut sewn up in the ER, but you're willing to let a minor take things that prevent their puberty, and you think they get that back? You give a woman testosterone enough that she grows a beard, you think she's going to go back looking like a woman when you stop the testosterone? You have permanently changed them. Infertility is another problem. None of these drugs have been approved for this. They're all being used off-label. I find it ironic that the left that went nuts over hydroxychloroquine being used possibly for COVID are not alarmed that these hormones are being used off-label. There's no long-term studies. We don't know what happens to them. We do know that there are dozens and dozens of people who've been through this who regret that this happened and a permanent change happened to them. And, you know, if you've ever been around children, 14-year-olds can't make this decision. In the gender dysphoria clinic in England, 10% of the kids are between the ages of 3 and 10. We should be outraged that someone's talking to a 3-year-old about changing their sex. I can't vote for you if you can't.
Thank you so much, Senator Paul. Senator Levine, thank you for answering the question. I will turn to Senator Baldwin.
Now, that's the government that is controlling medical student training, or not controlling, contributing funds to medical student training and the bureaucracy that has created doctors who cannot be good communicators and who cannot look you in the eye. They have to debate. And that, by the way, that woman, Dr. Levine, is now part of the government. She is part of the government. She's making decisions that are creating this confusion and these this legislation that says, oh, it's okay for 3- and 4-year-olds to go and have hormone therapy and all the other things, they're crazy things they're doing. So this is why we have to become the doctors. This is serious times we're in. When you have a government that has to debate these kind of issues that are absolutely insane, interfering with the bodies of 3- and 4- and 5-year-olds, and even now teenagers are regretting because they didn't have the guidance, the love, the compassion, and the wisdom from conscious people like us to come on this show and learn and educate ourselves. So let us be the doctors, especially of our teenagers. Those teens running around rampant in Chicago streets, breaking, hurting people, being violent, they need to have conversations with adults where we go eye to eye and talk about life and sugar and all the things that come up in our life. We need to be connecting with our youth right now. All you senior citizens, your job right now is to connect with these youth. Obviously, the signs are there. They're being misguided by crazy doctors, Dr. Levines of the world, who think it's okay to have puberty medicine. So I want to just thank my blog talk, my Facebook friends. I want to make a point about emotions real quick, because Zelda says, how I reverse type 2 diabetes, free download at diabeticdonut.com. So Zelda is our go-to for experience on healing diabetes and so much more, and that's why she's on Monday Morning Mindfulness with breathing exercise. She does stress relief. And I want to quote Louise Hay's book, Heal Your Body. And this gets back to this whole thing about can you find a good doctor. Buy Louise Hay's book, Heal Your Body. And there's your another doctor for you. Diabetes, Louise Hay says, is longing for what might have been, a great need to control, deep sorrow, no sweetness left in my life. Ah, there you go. We're looking for sugar and artificial sweeteners when what we really need is hugs and eye contact and conversations and love from our brothers and sisters. The affirmation for that diabetes imbalance is, this moment is filled with joy. I now choose to experience the sweetness of today. I woke up this morning with birds singing, and I was like, thank you for that sweet sound of birds singing. Last night I was in a group of women and one man with smelling oils for the chakra. That's the sweetness we need to develop in our lives. Push the sugar away, the donuts, the cookies, unless you want to go blind and with diabetes and insulin and all the medical crazy interventions. Let's push that sugar away. Get the berries in your diet, the yogurt, the kefir, eye-to-eye conversations. Let's be better communicators than these doctors who went to medical school that had an agenda not to improve our relationships with people and be better communicators, but the doctors were trained to promote the corporations that they work for. We have one more caller. We're over time, but I'm going to take this one caller. You got about 30 seconds. This is Brother Kwame Sunhor. Thank you, Kwame, for tuning in.
Grand rising, Sister Viata, and very important topic that you're having for our family. The thing that we have to understand is technology is being designed for the mind and the body of our youth. And what we're having to understand is we need more learning tools of social behavior engineering. As we come into this going into this 22nd century, we've got to be able to give the children, those ones that they're looking at altering, we've got to give them the tools to make the choices as to how to use this technology. Techno-spiritual is good in its way because this is what Female Solution is using. But we've got to be able to look at the behavioral control that is being done and used by technology. because as I most to say is that grandma's lap time is better than giving your child a laptop.
Hallelujah. And I must add that Brother Kwame Sunhurst conducts sweat lodges or Nipi ceremonies, and he's going to hopefully keep us informed when he's doing the next one so we can choose that doctor therapy versus the therapies offered by crazies in our government. Thank you, Brother Kwame, for that nugget of wisdom. And we're going to say goodbye. Everybody, please do your homework. Get on YouTube University and research your health problems on there first. And if you do have a conscious doctor, hallelujah, and you have insurance, of course, otherwise, just find support, people who will listen to you, and people on YouTube who, like Dr. Sunil, his name is Sunil, S-U-N-E-E-L-D-H-A-N-D, who can give you the wisdom and the knowledge that you need in these crazy times. And let's just do lots of meditation in nature. That's the other doctor. I forgot that nature is the doctor. Get out, hug trees, sit in the grass, and look at the sun. Yes, do sun gazing. And look at the clouds. Best therapy in the world. Doc, can't compare it with any of these medicines that
we've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archive at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, Gracias. Italy,
Grazie.
Egypt, Shukran. Ghana, Medasi. Nigeria, Eshe. South Africa, Ngiyabonga. Senegal, Jerez. Kenya, Asante. Israel, Toda. Pakistan, Shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God.
To all my yogi friends
and God's blessings.
Satnam and stay. Love, 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 spread the love and the light. Shalom.